Welcome to the Magic Hour with Pauly Malignaggi.
Proudly representing his hometown of Brooklyn, New York.
Pauly Malignaggi is a two-time world champ and Showtime boxing analyst. Joined by his sidekick, the world-famous Peter Cards, they break down boxing better than anyone on the planet. This is the Magic Hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Pauly, the Magic Man Malignaggi.
Same location, different time. What are we going to call this thing? Yeah, I feel like we need a new slogan for the show, Seth. Magic Hour. We need different new place, something. What are we gonna call the show, sir?
Like the Magic Hour. Like, you mean like Bounty has the quicker picker up, or we need like a catchphrase?
Yeah, we need like a catchphrase, dude. You know, like I feel like every week with Brooklyn for the World, we were like saying some cool stuff. We were naming the episodes. I don't know. I feel like with the Magic Hour, we need the. We need a catchphrase. Maybe we can defer to Pete for a nice catchphrase.
It'll be nice. I mean, you could do something.
Yeah, except Pete's not on the show again. You guys.
And he was late last week, too.
Well, he was late last week.
Yeah.
I think Pete's really slacking off on the Magic Hour. I don't know. The new show. We need the fans to really put some pep in Pete's step and get him going, you know?
Well, the problem is it's called the Magic Hour, and he's disappeared.
Yeah, well, that's one trick, I guess, for the Magic Hour, right? You make Pete disappear. Pete makes himself disappear. That could be the problem, too. We had the fights. We had the fights over the weekend.
Yeah, a lot of fights, man. Five big fights.
Yeah, we did a bunch of fights. Well, we did three of them. And there was a Fox fight that I still haven't actually caught. The Santa Cruz and the Modest fight. Have you caught them yet, Seth?
I did watch them, yeah. I'd like to get your opinion. I thought they stopped the Santa Cruz fight. They seemed like, you know, even though he was winning the fight, it seemed like they stopped it very abruptly.
Was Avalos giving a lot of arguments? Was he complaining about the stoppage?
Yeah, he was. He was pissed, and he should have been. It just seemed like it was stopped out of nowhere. I mean, his hands were up. He was defending himself. It just didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think at day then, if you're in a world title fight, you should be allowed to. You know, I don't know if this is like making any sense, but you should be allowed to take a little bit more punishment in order to before getting stopped. If you want to continue, you want to try to keep winning the fight. You know.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Santa Cruz looked good. Mars looked good. You know, they're obviously headed toward a collision, which was a great fight a few years ago in 2015. I'm sure it'll be another great one.
I saw a tweet from Carl Franklin saying, "Congratulations, boys, on your length of Santa Cruz and Mars." And he said, if you guys want to fight, you know, let me know or whatever. But something to that effect, you know. Did you see Brandon getting back in there?
He's fighting, right? He's on the. I gotta check his schedule. I know that he's got a fight on the docket. Let me take a look. I'll see if I can find it for you.
Yeah, I know he's got a fight on the docket, but I'm saying obviously he wants to get back in with the big boys, you know.
Of course, he's gonna have to wait his turn though.
Wants a third fight in Santa Cruz. He wants a third fight against Santa Cruz, or maybe he wants to get in there with Mars. But he's probably gonna have to wind up waiting for his turn because those guys are probably gonna wind up fighting each other, you know.
I think they're definitely going to fight each other. I think that's what they're setting up for. Carl's fighting on November 18th in Ireland against Horacio Garcia.
Horacio Garcia. All right, that's his first fight under a new deal. I believe he signed with Frank Warren. Actually, he left him in Wiggins, and I believe he signed with Frank Warren.
I believe it.
Yeah, no, I really think that's a fact. I think this will be his first fight under the new contract, is what I'm saying. Is there any word on who he's training with now? Because I know Shane McGuigan was Barry's son, obviously, you know, when the split happened from the McGuigans, promotionally, I know Shane and Carl also stepped away from each other. Who's the area you're working with? I mean, obviously, at this point, I'm sure he's training if he's fighting November 18th.
I'm going to take a look and see if I can find for you. Jamie Moore.
Jamie Moore. Oh, okay. Jamie Moore, yeah. Jamie Moore's a good young trainer. He's an ex-fighter, very exciting fighter. If anybody's never seen Jamie Moore fight Matthew Macklin for the European title, I think. I believe it was the European title fight. It was years ago, but this was basically like the European version of Gotti versus Ward. I mean, this was like...
Oh, wow.
Oh, hell broke loose. Yeah, Jamie Moore versus Matthew Macklin. All out. Rough him up, sock him out type of fight. One of the most exciting fights you'll see. That'll be the home of the time for any listeners who haven't watched that fight. I mean, we have a lot of listeners from the UK, so I'm sure they're familiar with it. But whoever is not familiar with it, check it out on YouTube. Jamie Moore versus Matthew Maclin. That was World War, bro.
I'm gonna write it down. I'm gonna look for it. I'm surprised he split. Him and McGuigan seem like they're really tight. I guess they had a falling out.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you leave the father emotionally, I guess maybe the son didn't want to deal with it or whatnot. I believe that's kind of the. I got the sense that I got from that the whole thing. You know, the McGuigan just wanted to part ways altogether. There wasn't gonna be anything promotional. And Shane wasn't gonna be involved in training Carl nonetheless. You know, so it was. I'm sure some bad blood, probably a little bit of bad blood there.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if he looks good, he'll be right in the mix for, you know, maybe the winner or another title fight at 126.
Absolutely, I think so. I mean, yeah, and he'll deservedly be in the mix if he's, you know, if he gets himself back in the saddle and looking good, and obviously on TV, well, and getting big fights and getting big wins, you know. So we'll see. But first with Mars and Santa Cruz, I mean, based on how they look Saturday, what would you think a fight between the two would be, or a rematch between the two would be like?
I don't know. I'm a big Santa Cruz fan because I like the way he made adjustments. Like, you guys weren't even, you know, a lot of guys weren't sure he could make those adjustments against Frampton, and he did. I think he's a better fighter than people thought he was.
Yeah, I mean, he's a better fighter than I thought he was. You know, not that he was a better fighter to begin with, but
right.
You know, he showed different dimension when you know, it's one thing to show me a skill set in a certain dimension, but then when you're actually able to change dimensions, it impresses me a bit more. You know. I didn't think Leo had that change of dimensions in him, and obviously he did. I remember when I had told him about it, I'm like, bro, we got to see you fight like that more often. I mean, you know, you'll be throwing guys for a loop if you box like that and then also come forward and take guys out with a heavy arsenal of a lot of punches thrown, you know what I'm saying, of activity, no less. That's what I was looking for, activity. You know, this guy also was stepping back, jabbing, and countering. I mean, it was something nice to watch in that Frampton rematch.
He's one of my favorite fighters. He works so hard, and I mean, him and Morris are going to be incredible.
Yeah.
And
also two very likable guys, two real cool guys. And it's also a Southern California turf battle, so you know you'll always get the Mexican Americans over there and just the California crowd out there. You know, really, really get into it. You know, but when those guys fight, let alone when they fight each other, which is just makes for some immense promotion, you know. So I look forward to that. Plus, you have the fact that they fought once already. It was a really exciting fight. So everything comes into play for an exciting rematch in the new year, I think, you know.
And before we get to your card, there was one other title fight in London on Saturday.
Yeah. There was a World Boxing Super Series, right, with George Groves?
Yep, Groves against Cox.
Yeah, it was Jamie Cox, you know. Right, Jamie Cox, is that his name,
yep,
Jamie?
It is.
George put himself into the next round of the World Boxing Super Series where he'll meet Chris Eubank. And I love that fight. I'll tell you, I love that fight. You know, the funny thing about George Groves, he's a really good fighter. I think he's one of those guys, though, that he has such a tough schedule as far as getting title fights because, you know, obviously Badu Jack's not an easy title fight. And then he lost a title fight also before the Badu Jack fight. Who did he lose the title fight to? He lost two world title fights.
I'll tell you in a second.
He lost to Badu Jack. And who did he also lose to?
Those three fights total. He lost to Badu Jack in 2015, September.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he lost two. Oh, he lost to Carl Froch. That's right.
That's the one. Yeah.
Two in a row.
I was going to forget the Froch fight. So the one with stadium in front of 80,000 people. I mean, so the rematch anyway, I worked it. But yeah, so, you know, he's a guy that he's done his best years. He had some really tough title fights. And, you know, maybe couldn't get over the hump. I think in his prime, even though he's championship material, and when I saw him fight Chudinov, I was very happy for him to see him win the world title. I thought he's a guy that deserved it. He's a guy that, you know, has had a tough schedule. I mean, this is a kid that beat James DeGale early in both their careers. The fact that he even fought early in both their careers is nuts, you know. But, you know, he has a win over James DeGale as well. So I was happy for him to finally get over the hump and win the world title. That we thought he was championship material. But the Chudinov fight, I wasn't convinced. As far as, I actually think Groves is a little past his best. You know what I'm saying? Like, I actually think Groves was better during the fights with Froch or even the Badu Jack fight. You know, I think Groves showed me a bit more in those fights, just the opponents were better. You know, so oddly and ironically enough, I'm happy he's a world champion. This is a guy who obviously deserves it, but I don't think he's as good of a fighter as he was a few years back, you know, when he actually didn't have the world title, you know, so... I want to see. I'm curious to see how he looks against Eubank because I think Eubank is actually ascending. I think he's getting better and better. I think he's becoming a better and better fighter. he's more than just a Eubank name now. I mean, he's starting to create his own legacy here. You know, he's starting to create his own name, which is not easy to do when you have a father as famous as his father was. And also, it's not easy to do because most of the time these sons are just following in their father's footsteps, not because they really want to box, but because half the time they're just trying to pick up the name. They saw their father box, and they got a little older. They never boxed in their life. They're like, oh, my father did it. I want to do it too. And they're just picking up press off the last name. The Eubank is really actually starting to create his own name here with looking exciting. He knows how to fight. He's not just the Eubank last name. He knows how to fight, you know? I think it's going to be a really fun fight. I hope we can get this damn fight in the U.S., man. It's World Boxing Super Series. They don't show it in the U.S. I was told they have a channel on DirecTV. Funny because I have DirecTV. I forget what it's called, though. There's a channel on DirecTV.
The Audience Channel or something?
Is that what it's called, Audience Channel?
I think so. I'll find out for you.
For anybody that has DirecTV, Audience Channel gets these World Boxing Super Series fights. So I'm going to start looking for them. I couldn't check for Saturday because I had to be at Barclays Arena too early. Because when I work, I have to be at the arena earlier in the day to start rehearsing and stuff. But
Audience Network, that's right. It's Audience Network.
So for the future, I mean, on days for when I have the World Boxing Super Series, I'm going to check if I have this channel, man, because, you know, if I do, that's really lit for me, man, because then I can actually watch the fights, and it's not even on the nighttime. It's on in the afternoon here in the U.S., you know? I can actually catch these fights. So I'm, I'll have to look for anybody out there as well in the U.S. Well, if you have the Audience Channel, let me know. Let me know if you guys have been getting these fights or if you guys have been watching the fights on this channel, so I can actually check it out myself, you know?
And you mentioned he lost to Badu Jack, and that was a split decision, too, so it wasn't like he got smoked.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think it should have been a split. I thought Badu clearly won the fight, but I thought George, you know, didn't do himself a disservice. Like, I thought George fought well. It's just Badu is the kind of fighter who's getting better and better, you know? And it was during Badu's, like, you know, ascension as well, you know? Like, that was around the time where people weren't realizing how good Badu was actually getting, you know? So the Ghost fight was actually going in there at risk. I remember Badu dropped him right in round one. He dropped him, you know, and then, but George got up and fought back and fought valiantly, and, you know, it was a good fight, you know. George is no slouch, and he's well-deserving of his world title. I just, I don't know. I mean, right now, if I had to really make somebody a favorite in that fight right now, I think I'd make Eubank the favorite, you know. But it's a fun fight, and I don't make that pick with any kind of conviction, you know. I still think, you know, it's the kind of fight where you'd be dumb to actually be secure enough in yourself to pick a winner and actually bet on it and think you're actually going to guarantee yourself a win, you know. I think it's one of the fights where, but those are the kind of fights you enjoy when they're actually on, when they're fighting, you know. So it'll be something to look forward to checking that out. Plus, all British rivalries are always fun, and obviously this one's going to be no different. Plus, both these guys are really good talkers, by the way, you know. But Eubank has this demeanor about him, quiet and confident, but he'll talk shit. And then Gerald is a real shit talker, as we've seen in his rivalries with DeGale, you know. So I think the promotion could be fun too, you know. I mean, we're not going to have Ahmed Oner yelling and then threatening to kill people, like we did in the Yildirim versus Eubank press conference. But still, I think it'll be fun. It'll be fun, you know.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about your fights that you were ringside for. Look at that great photo of you.
A big junior middleweight card over at Barclays Center Saturday. Obviously, we did the weigh-in show. We had Thurman and Spence, which I thought was really fun. I thought it was really fun to have those guys on. I really think it's important for fans to get to know not just the fighters as fighters, but also the fighters as people. You know, every fighter comes from their own world, their own personality, their own background, their own personal life. And, you know, I think it's really cool when we get to sit down with you guys and actually go in depth a little bit about their personal lives and, you know, things they like, things they don't like. I thought it was really, really eye-opening, you know, with Keith giving us a little insight into his personal life and whatnot and all that cool stuff. And obviously, Errol is a kid who's still on the rise. He just won the world title, so he's just chomping at the bit to just fight everybody, you know. And anybody that's been at that point in their careers where they're fresh champions or they're chasing big fights, you know what I'm talking about. It's a different feeling than it is when it's later in your career when you kind of already had that, you know. So, you know, you get excited about listening to Errol speak. And Errol speak about, you know, his hunger and the desire to get in there with the big fight, with the big guns as well. I think it'll be a lot of fun when they finally do fight each other. I think that fight's gonna be a ton of fun. I think the fans are gonna win either way, you know.
And I tell you, those two guys were just great representatives of the sport, man. Just two great guys.
Yeah, likable guys. I mean, honestly, if Errol was a Giants fan, I'd probably, you know, give him a couple extra points. But I mean, because him being a Cowboys fan, he probably you know, he probably loses a little bit of luster. But
Paulie, you gotta win.
We'll give him a pass.
The Giants won a game.
Yeah, you ain't kidding, bro. Nobody expected that. Two touchdowns on the Dolphins. They won.
Unbelievable.
Right? They won by almost two touchdowns.
Crazy, right? You can't figure. Football's crazy this year.
But
you can't figure it out.
I'll tell you what it is. Sometimes the teams don't give a shit. You know, you're playing a team that's 0-5 and can't play worth shit. Sometimes you end up going out and hanging out. It's funny. I was talking to Antonio Pierce a couple weeks ago. I saw him in a Vivid strip club. I was hanging out over there, and Antonio Pierce, a former Giant, is over there, and he's telling me, and I was telling him about the OA team, the one where Plaxico ended up shooting himself and everything went up in smoke, you know?
Yeah.
And I was telling him, you know, we're talking about, you know, this team, this year's team, and whatnot. I was telling him, but I was the best Giant team I ever saw in my life, and they didn't even win anything, you know, because once Plaxico shot himself, everything went up in smoke. I'd never seen a Giant team that good. I said, but what the fuck happened to you guys during that Browns game? Because that was the only loss they had. If you remember, I don't know.
10-1, right?
They started 11-1. The only loss was that of Browns. So, I was like, what the fuck happened in that Browns game, bro? And he's like, wow, they were all in four, we're coming in. He goes, we hung out all night. We didn't think these guys were coming to play. He goes, then they scored two quick touchdowns on us, and we were looking at each other like, damn, bro. He goes, you guys came out to play, you know? So I think the Broncos got a severe case of what happened to the Giants and Browns that year. I think the Broncos probably look at the Giants like, this team absolutely sucks. You know, sometimes you mentally sleep on them. And then they came out to play. But, you know, an 0-5 team wants to win a game at least, you know.
But not to mention the injuries too. They lost a couple of their top two receivers too.
Yeah, Brandon Marshall and Beckham. I don't know.
Crazy.
I wouldn't get too confident about the Giants upcoming season, despite the big win yesterday. I think it was more to do with the Broncos sleeping than the Giants doing anything in particular.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so off to the GM middleweight fights. We had the fights on Saturday night. We had the opening fight, the opening TV fight turned out to be probably the most fun fight, you know, without a doubt.
Oh, God, yeah.
Trout and Hurd. Hurd and Trout. And Hurd is starting to get the reputation of being a bit of a slow starter, but it takes the fight to you. And he's got this awkwardness to him where he'll, like, cross his feet, but he's able to shoot shots from both stances in a way where he doesn't plant himself in both stances. Like, he doesn't, like, actually come out and fight through the top forever. But as he's punching, his punches kind of, like, have this way about them, this openness about them, where as he's punching, he'll kind of, like, switch his feet over, and he'll be punching out of the southpaw stance randomly. But then if there's any kind of distance, he'll go back to the right-handed stance. He doesn't actually plant himself in any kind of southpaw stance. He winds up there sometimes. And I thought at the stoppage at the end, he was starting to land some really good left crosses on Trout. You know, he landed about three of really hard left crosses on Trout in the last round. Credit to Austin Trout, a veteran who kind of, in his mind, was fighting for that a certain amount of respect, that, you know, maybe people weren't giving him because, you know, you started to think that a guy's shot or that a guy's done. And I've kind of been through this. When people don't see you all of a sudden, like, for a little while, suddenly you're shot just because they haven't seen you. And it's not that – it has nothing else to do with anything else. They're just based on Austin Trout's shot because they haven't seen him. And I've been through that before myself. You know, I remember after I lost to Khan, and I kind of had to have some low-level TV fights in between, and then I suddenly was fighting for the world title. And nobody picked me. It was like they forget about you just because they don't see you. Like, suddenly, it's not that you actually can't fight. It's that because they haven't seen you, in their mind, they decided that you're just shot, you know, for some reason. I think Austin Trout, if there's one thing he proved Saturday, that he's not shot, you know. I think Austin was doing very well in the fight. Early on, I thought Austin was going to win the fight. I mean, early on, yep. Austin was doing that well. But I'll be honest with you, Hurd told us in the fighter meeting, he said, nothing counts in the beginning. He goes, the beginning of with Harrison, we were just getting started. We were walking him down. We knew we were going to get to him eventually. He goes, no, we don't worry about what happens in the beginning of the fight. Because we know once we get started, we're going to start tracking you down and we're going to get to you. And I got to be honest. Trout is not Harrison. Trout has more experience. If Trout gets started on a better foot, he's going to know how to hold on at the end of the fight. And then if he gets rough, he's going to know how to be able to win the fight. But nah, man, Hurd just didn't let him do it. And so I was wrong. I mean, I had to say, I should have took Hurd's word for it. That when Trout was doing good, I should have been like, you know, Hurd did say this is going to happen. So,
and for anybody who didn't see this fight, it was a great fight. These guys were hitting each other. They were going at it, and you know, most of the fight. And then, you know, I think Trout slowed down at the end. So if you guys haven't seen it, you got to see it.
One thing Hurd does very well, though, he makes you feel like you have to fight more than you do. You know, like, Hurd brings you this weird physical and mental pressure to where he feels he starts to make you feel like you gotta fight him off at every second, you know? Because I thought Harrison was doing it, and I thought that Harrison's just not experienced enough, you know? Like he doesn't realize he doesn't always have to fight this. He can do other things to kill time here, even though Hurd is bringing it. Because Hurd is bringing it in a weird, awkward way that you don't even know how to get away half the time because he's switching stances in there. He's throwing punches from awkward angles. So all of a sudden, you don't know where you should be to be resting, you know? But I thought Trout was going to be able to figure out a way, being he's got that veteran experience. But even Trout, so obviously, if he was able to do it even with Trout, Hurd is something, man. Hurd is not something somebody you sleep on, you know? There's obviously something up there. There's a method to his mayhem. There's a mechanism of thinking there. So it's interesting, you know?
And from a fan's perspective, it seemed like he's very strong and he can take it. Like, he just seems like he's a really strong guy.
Yeah. He can take it. I mean, he doesn't always take everything cleanly. He's kind of riding with a lot of shots, but still, nonetheless, he can take it. And he's a strong guy. Definitely a strong guy. I mean, we've seen some of his high-level knockouts in the past. You know, he's got a big shot with that right hand, especially the uppercut, which he actually didn't land. I don't know if he landed any right hand uppercut this fight, but he's definitely a strong puncher. So that keeps him going. Which leads us right into the next fight. It leads us into the Jermell Charlo Erickson Lubin fight, which was probably the fight I was most looking forward to. And sometimes you end up getting things like this, man. You know, it reminds me of like Jacobs and Quillen too, where I thought it was going to be a great fight, and then somebody gets caught and the fight ends. You know, I think this fight was one of those two. I was looking forward to it. I thought this was going to be a great fight. I still believe Erickson Lubin is a tremendous fighter. But he got caught, and then the fight just ends like that. I remember thinking this when Trinidad and Vargas fought. You remember that fight, Seth?
Yep, I saw it.
I remember when Trinidad and Vargas fought, and Trinidad dropped Vargas once, and he dropped him twice. I remember thinking to myself, wow, this sucks. This was going to be such a great fight, and now it's going to end in round one. How fucking shitty is this? People may get excited for first-round knockouts, but for me, when it's two great fighters fighting, I get disappointed.
Yep.
Because you know, you got to be conscious in order to be fighting, and somebody gets their consciousness taken away from them, you know, suddenly you can't fight, you know. Even though they're both great fighters, you know, you don't get to actually see a fight. So I think that's what happened. Obviously, Vargas ended up getting up, and we ended up getting the fight that everybody expected, was a tremendous fight. And obviously, if everybody remembers, Trinidad ended up stopping Vargas in the 12th round of a tremendous fight. But you know, when in the situation with Jacobs and Quillen, never got out of round one, so you end up disappointed. You know, now with this situation, Charlo and Lubin, the same thing. The fight ends in round one, you know, so you don't actually get to see a fight start to evolve, because really a fight starts to evolve. You know, round one is usually the feel-out round, and I thought they were basically having a feel-out round. You know, they weren't really stepping in with anything hard. They were snapping out good jabs. You could see the pedigree on both fighters, just in their stances and the way they were relaxed, the way they were snapping out shots, even if they weren't landing. And then I'll tell you, man, Charlo set a nice trap. I'll tell you, what a nice trap he set, you know, with that jab he made Lubin dip down. And, you know, usually you dip it down that way, because it's a straight right hand that's coming across. And so, you know, you'll dip underneath it. But Charlo threw that jab out there, and knowing Google was going to dip, and then just stepped in real hard with that right hand uppercut.
It was a weird angle, man. It was hard to even see it.
I think it was partially like a forearm. I don't think the punch landed on the knuckle. I think it was like forearm slash punch, you know?
Yeah.
It reminds me, you know what I think had a knockdown like this? I think Roy Jones dropped Calzaghe with that kind of shot. It wasn't Hopkins. I don't remember exactly. I think he did drop Calzaghe early in
the fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it the Jones fight? I think.
Yes.
I think it might have been Roy Jones and Calzaghe. And I think it was like, and Calzaghe also got hit with what I felt looked like a forearm type of shot, you know? Because, you know, you run out of room to kind of with the uppercut, you know, and as you're stepping in, you run out of room, so you don't get it turned all the way, and then, you know, instead of, I mean, you're turning it, you end up just, you know, landing with the wrist part where you know, because the shot is on the way. Obviously, he knocked out Lubin cold, unfortunately, and so, you know, that we didn't get to see a great fight, but obviously, it puts an exclamation point on Jermell Charlo's title reign so thus far, you know, because now he's looking more and more impressive every fight, you know, he's got the John Jackson fight, where you're wondering what the hell happened to this guy, because he looked terrific his whole career. You know, I was always impressed with Jermell Charlo. So when you see the John Jackson fight, and I'm like, what the hell happened to this guy, man? What are you doing every round? Like, he looks confused. And then he gets Jackson out of there. I thought it was one of the weird stoppages. I thought Jackson just quit there, but whatever. It is what it is. Then the Charles Hatley fight, you know, Hatley comes in with a bit of a sleeper reputation because he's with Don King. You haven't seen him. He had a great amateur career. And Jermell gets a great knockout, a good performance. and really stamps himself as a world champion with that defense. And not just Eric's, a Rubin defense, I think really puts a stamp on things. You know, like Rubin, you can call him untested, you can call him whatever. I'm gonna call him what I was calling him before this fight, because I don't care. I still think he's terrific, and I think he's talented. He's one of the best young fighters in boxing. If you eliminated one of the best young fighters in boxing like that, you get credit for it. You know, I still believe this would have been a great fight if they got out of round one, but I got to be honest with you, it didn't get out of round one, and that's credit to Jermell Charlo. And, you know, you gotta give him credit for that. You gotta give him credit for that. I still believe Rubin, if he wants to come back, he will be back. Some people are gonna say it's too much too soon. I don't believe it was. I believe Rubin was ready for the fight. You just get caught sometimes. I don't think getting caught has anything to do with too much too soon at all. It wasn't like he caught a bad beating. I think if you catch a bad beating, then you say, all right, it was too much too soon. Rubin didn't catch a bad beating. He just got clipped in round one and he got caught. I don't think that makes it a case of anything being too much too soon. I still think Rubin's a world-class fighter, and I still think Rubin, you can put Rubin in there with any world-class fighter, and he'll perform to what he can perform with. That's just my opinion.
You know, it helps Charlo to be able to prepare with another southpaw, being Errol Spence. That's a great sparring partner to have.
Absolutely. Jermell has had some great southpaw sparring in his career, because even when he was in the Ronnie Shields training camp, let's face it, he had Arizona Mulata in camp, you know? So Jermell is no dummy when it comes to left-handers. He's gotten a lot of rounds of sparring in his career with some great left-handers. First it was Lara when he was in the Ronnie Shields training camp, and now it's obviously Errol Spence what's his trainer's name? Oh, it's Errol's trainer's name too. Oh, you're gonna kill me, man. What's his name?
I'll find it. Hey, in the meantime, while I'm looking, what happened with the camps? And somebody threw something at Jermell. What was going on there?
Somebody threw a chair in Jermell's. Somebody threw a chair in Jermell's training camp. You know, I mean, in Jermell's corner, over to the corner, and then all hell broke loose. Yo, they chased that kid. You guys have seen it on camera. They look like 15 entourage people from the Charlo team and chase that kid to the locker room. Whoever threw the chair just sprints right by us by our
Jesus.
By ringside. And then literally you saw like 15 Team Charlo jackets chasing after him. I don't know what happened, but man, if they caught that guy in the back, I feel bad for him.
Oh, God, yeah.
Maybe security stopped them. I don't know, but there's a lot of security involved.
You throw a chair at somebody, you deserve to get beat up.
Yeah, but man, I'll tell you, if they caught that guy, he might still be in the hospital, man. I swear they won't. He was getting chased by like 15 dudes, bro.
What was he thinking? What was he thinking?
I don't know. I mean, I guess we weren't there, so I mean,
yeah, Jermell was pissed, man.
Rightfully so. I mean, shit, yeah. I'm gonna be pissed too if I get somebody throw a chair at me. God, I'm this is killing me. What is Jermell and Errol's training?
It's Derek James.
Derek, that's what it's. I keep wanting to say Steven Edwards. I don't know why. Derek, that's what it's. Derek James, yeah. I got seen many times, obviously, and he's a smart, good young trainer, man. And obviously, he's training two of the best fighters in the sport. You know, so it's good stuff there. And then afterwards, you know, they ask Jermell who he wants to fight. And Jermell's kind of on the spot. You know, he's feeling himself right now. He's got the first round knockout. He's feeling himself. And I don't think he picked Jared Hurd just because he picked him. I think he just picked him just because he just fought before him. You know, so it was like the first name on his mind.
It's kind of funny.
because the way he answered the question, it wasn't like he had thought about, okay, next I win on Saturday, I'm going to want to pick this guy. It literally just came out of nowhere. Like, who just fought Hurd? Oh, yeah, I want him. I want Hurd. Because in the fighter meeting the day before, he was saying how, you know, he wouldn't mind fighting Lara now, you know. Lara, you know, he's not in the camp anymore. He wouldn't mind fighting Arislan Lara. And Lara had also mentioned in the fighter meeting that, yeah, man, you know, sometimes it's a business. And Jermell left the camp. So if we fight, we fight, you know. So it's I think that makes for some real, real interesting stuff. Because that kind of leads us to the next point, which is Lara's fight with Gashay, which I thought was supremely boring.
Yeah,
but I think that's due to Lara's opponents. Lara is obviously a very effective fighter, but he's a guy that, in order to bring his best out of him, you got to be good enough to do it, you know. And I like Terrell Gashay. I think he's gotten the most out of his ability. He's been an Olympian. He's a good dude. Every time you see him, you know, and he's the kind of guy you want to root for. But at day's end, he hasn't really improved a lot since he turned pro. You know, he hasn't really shown you like that extra dynamic to where you can, there's a switch that gets switched in somebody's career where it's like, oh man, he's really progressing. He's starting to really come around as a professional. Gashay has just looked pretty ordinary throughout his career, you know, suffering knockdowns against nondescript opposition, close fights against the nondescript opposition. You know, they got him here. They got him here because they moved him the right way. They moved him well. He works hard and all that stuff. But the Lara fight, I mean, he barely made a lot of worry. I mean, it was like, whatever, you know what I mean? And you got to be good enough to bring that out of Lara, you know what I mean? Gachet wasn't the kind of guy that was ever going to do it. But I think you put Jermell and Lara against each other, and I think you have some fireworks in the ring, and I also think you have some stuff to talk about outside the ring, you know, the extracurricular stuff, because these guys were former gym mates and former team members, and now they're not, but they're still rivals in the same weight class, and they're still training in the
champions.
Same And champions, of course. So
let me ask you a question, though, Paulie. Say you're Jermell Charlo. If you have to pick between Lara and Hurd, I think I know who I'd pick. Who would you pick?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. Because you got to understand this, too. Lara, people are going to look at Lara's performance Saturday as that. Maybe he's losing a step, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really impressive. Hurd is hittable. Hurd is strong, man. Hurd is strong.
And Hurd also,
you don't really know how to time him yet. You know what I'm saying? He's got a weird style to him. You don't know how to time him. Sometimes you want the evil you know rather than the evil you don't. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like, though.
And I'm not saying that Lara is the choice. I'm saying
right.
there's different things. You got to put the perspective when you're making that choice.
It's a tough choice. For me, I feel like the shots that Trout was hitting Hurd with, if Jermell's hitting those shots, I don't know how much he can take from Jermell, because Jermell seems like his power keeps getting better and better.
But Jermell's also not going to put 8 punches together. When you're putting that many punches together in a combination, you're taking stuff off them. You know, like you're a harder puncher when you're a 2 and 3 punch guy. You know, when you're a 7 and 8 punch guy, you're not punching as hard anymore because, you know, in order to throw that many punches, you're taking something off them. You know, so throwing that many punches in a row anyway. You know,
yeah.
So it's a different kind of fight. It evolves completely differently. I think the Lara fight is more sellable because of the in-house kind of beef, because that there's a subtle tension between those two now, you know?
Yeah.
There's a subtle tension. And also, you have to understand, Jermell trains with Ronnie, Jermell's brother. But obviously, he's not going to go against his brother. You know, so you got Jermell in Ronnie's gym. That's going to get weird. You know, you're going to have, you know, I guess Ronnie's not going to want Jermell in the gym. He's going to tell Ronnie, listen, you got to get this guy out of here, you know?
Wait, they split up, the twins split up trainers? He's still with
You don't know how Jermell's going to take that. You know what I'm saying? You don't know how Jermell's going to take that, you know? Because Jermell's with Derrick James, but Jermell's still with Ronnie Shields, you know?
Wow. I didn't realize they split trainers. They split up.
Yeah, so and having that, I mean, that might piss off. I mean, we all know Jermell's going to take his brother's back as a twin brother. But in having that, you know, Jermell may feel some type of way about Ronnie telling him, listen, bro, you can't be in the gym. You know, Eric Lyons got to train for your brother. I can't have you here, you know? But it's even putting Ronnie in a tough situation, and it creates a lot of tension, which is great for a storyline for fans and stuff
sure.
like that. But I don't know how much of a inside beef you're gonna create over there in Houston with that, you know, with Jermell being in the camp and now with Ronnie training for his brother and whatnot. It's all interesting stuff. It's all interesting stuff that could be discussed if they make that fight, you know.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely interesting. And I think Lara would be he's one of those guys. He's really good, and he's easy to overlook.
Yeah, Lara's no spring chicken, so Lara's got to chase the biggest fights. You know, he's always been a guy who's chased the biggest fights. Credit to him. You know, even the ones he hasn't gotten, he's always chased them. You know, he was the guy who was always calling on Golovkin when nobody wanted to fight him. He wanted Canelo. He wanted the rematch of Canelo, and Canelo wouldn't give it to him with that very close fight. I thought he got robbed against Rob Blind against Paul Williams back in the day.
Yeah,
Islandi is no slouch, bro. No slouch.
No doubt.
And neither is Jermell. It would make some. That junior middleweight, I tell you, I keep talking about the junior middleweight division. It is so much fun. There's so many good fighters in there. You can never run out of possible matchups. It's just as long as fans aren't so unforgiving that when a guy gets beat, they totally write him off. Because these guys can be put right back in there against each other. You just mix and match them, whoever wins, whoever loses, mix and match, continue mixing and matching them. Because this is how many good fighters are in this weight class. It's a sick, sick weight class. I don't know that I've ever been alive to see a weight class with this many good fighters. I mean, coming up on like the 20th of October, around then, you're going to have a Bubo Andre fight, Alante Fox, you know? Alante Fox, nobody even knows about him. He's 6'5". You know
Jesus.
What I mean? Actually, I might be lying. That might be a junior. That might be a middleweight fight. I don't want to take Florida junior middleweight because I know he has a draw against Frank Galarza. Galarza, mind you, was a good New York prospect, but he lost to Jared Hurd in a battle of defeated a couple of years ago. So actually, no, I might be lying. They might have made Boo Boo move up in weight, but I don't think Boo Boo Andre he's moving up in weight because he wants to. I think Bobo might be moving up in weight just to get the fight, you know, just to get a TV fight, you know. But even those two, I know for one, Bobo may still be able to make junior middleweight. Alantes was a junior middleweight. Like I said, he has the draw against Galarza, junior middleweight. I don't know if he can still make junior middleweight. At 6'5", I don't, maybe he grew out of the weight class. I wouldn't find anybody who's 6'5" to be, and can make junior middleweight to be unbelievable, you know. So maybe he filled out and he's at middleweight now. But nonetheless, you still have guys who are seeping in the background, like guys like Banis, for example. You know, that kid's always dangerous. You know, you never hear about him, but he's always dangerous. Trout lost a close fight. He's still going to be around. Erickson Lubin, I don't care what anybody tells me, Erickson Lubin will be a world champion one day if he believes in himself. And I think Erickson Lubin will come back strong and want to kick some ass. So you still have to keep him in there. He's still a nasty, nasty fighter, you know. You have, who else you have? Jamal's brother moved up in weight to 160, so he's left. You saw the Jackson, John Jackson, the one that fought Jamal for the title. Obviously, he remains dangerous. I mean, he was beating Jamal when he got stopped, you know. You have him. You have, who else we got? Who's the guy Bobo beat last year? He was pretty good, too. The guy that Bobo beat last year at the Turning Stone Casino. He's from Cleveland. He's from Ohio.
Okay.
Tall kid. He's a tall kid.
Oh, Willie Nelson?
Willie Nelson, yep. Still remains viable. You know, he's probably in the second half of the top 10, if not top 15, you know, but he's a pretty solid guy. You know, he's a guy that, you know, you can't play with. Willie Nelson will come and fight you, you know? You have him. You have Coyle, obviously.
He's retiring. He's out.
Well, whatever. He's still there. He's still WBO junior middleweight champion, you know? Mind you, that he's fighting Saddam Ali. Let's go into that right now. You know, Cordo's fighting Saddam Ali. Saddam, obviously, is a kid. I know he's 8 years old. I know Saddam, he's 8 years old. Matter of fact, his father called me yesterday. I'm just remembering now that we're talking about it. I didn't call him back, so I got to call Saddam's father back. Maybe they'll call me and ask me questions about Cordo. But I know Saddam's 8 years old, and I know how talented Saddam is. I know Saddam comes... And he doesn't come to play, you know? Like he's always had a dream of being a world champion, and his career has moved a little bit slowly. He lost the world title fight to Vargas, but he's a kid, you know, he was the first Arab American to represent the U.S. in the Olympics back in 2008. He's a hungry, ambitious kid, and although he's floated below the radar more so than he's wanted to, he's still kind of been hovering around the top level. So I think this is his chance to really bust through. It's a great fight for both guys, I feel, because Cotto gets a retirement fight where it's not against a slouch, but it's not against a guy that's known, at least on paper, as a complete destroyer and killer, you know, where you got to be like, man, you know, what is Cotto doing, you know? Cotto is trying to go out in a respectable fashion against a really good fighter, but not a guy that, you know, will also maybe risk him getting decapitated with, like, you know, like a guy get Canelo, you know what I'm saying, where it's a real, real super risk fight. So Saddam can win the fight, Cotto can win the fight. You know what I'm saying? I think it's a great point for both their careers to kind of match up against each other, you know? If Saddam wins, he gets the notoriety he's been lacking, you know, right away. Because beating a Cotto at this point, no matter how old the Cotto is, Cotto's still the junior middleweight champion within the WBO, and he still brings the name he brings. You know, so beating Cotto automatically gives Saddam all the notoriety that he's been craving. And for Cotto, beating Saddam allows Miguel to retire in a very, very respectable way. You know what I'm saying? In a very respectable way, beating one of the better fighters in the sport, even though he's a little bit underrated, he beating an ex-Olympian. I think it's a set retirement fight where on paper it's dangerous, but it's not too dangerous. And for Saddam, you're getting Cotto at the right time. If you're him, if you know, you can't not take this fight, even though it's out of your weight class. You know, that's another thing going for Cotto. Saddam is a welterweight, not a junior middleweight. But for Saddam, you know, you're getting him, yeah, you got to go up and wait, but you're getting a world title fight out of it, and you're getting him against one of the legends of the sport. So beating him makes you a world champion, and it also gives you that highly, highly recognizable name on your ledger to continue on with your career afterwards, you know. So, but I like the fight. I like the fight for both guys, and I look forward to it, you know.
Yeah, I was looking at the junior middleweights. There's a bunch of guys. Even Julian Williams is, you know, he lost the.
Yeah, Julian Williams. Yeah, we can't see. That's what I hate, man. See, I'm culpable of that too right now. You guys lose and you forget about them. You see, I'm my fault too. I forgot to mention Julian Williams. I thought you also moving up to junior middleweight. Who else is moving up to junior middleweight from England? Is Kell Brook. Kell Brook's gonna move up when he comes back. We'll see how much he has left. Speaking of the English junior middleweights, You know, you obviously have William Smith, junior middleweight champion, that lost to Canelo. You know, he's there. You know, he remains viable as well.
What about Selecki? You like Selecki?
Who?
Is he's undefeated, 25-0. Selecki is his last name. His first name is Maciej.
I don't know if I've ever seen him in my life.
He won his last four fights in a row in the U.S., including knockouts of decent opponents as Santino Jr. and Proka, and he returned home to Poland. He's from Poland. He's a bunch of knockouts. He's fighting Cole K.
He's fighting Cole K. All right.
Yeah, October 21st, next week.
Oh, okay, cool. So you have Cole K there. You know, those Germans are a little weird. You know, I don't know how good Cole K is. You know, like, he's decent, but like in Germany, they'll feed you 25 hot dog stand vendors. They'll make you world champion. So it's always a little bit tricky when you only fight in Germany. You know.
We got an HBO fight, too.
You still have to mention cocaine, nonetheless, you know?
Yeah, we got an HBO fight on Saturday as well, Machado versus Corrales.
Oh, yeah, that's a super featherweight.
Yep.
Yeah, super featherweight. Who's the co-feature of that card? I think it's a nice co-feature of that card, too. I believe it's a decent co-feature on Saturday night as well on that card, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm trying to find it because I missed that
Machado
one fight.
Machado's a nice fight. That's a WBA, I think that's a WBA super featherweight title. That's a nice
Correct.
Fight.
In Verona, your favorite place.
Yeah. I'm indifferent about it.
All right. Don't get mad.
Who's the co-feature?
Ochoa? Is that the one you're talking about? Super lightweight prospect from Brooklyn?
What?
No, that's not it. Wait. I got it. Demetrius Big Meech Ballard, 10-round super middleweight fight versus Lamont Roach Jr., that one?
That's the co-feature? No, that's not the one.
No, where is it?
That's the sound like HBO fight. The HBO co-feature, I think, Saturday was.
I'm looking for the co-feature. It's not telling me.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I based on a different card, but I could have sworn there was a co-feature on that card that had piqued my interest. But we'll see. Maybe it's a different card.
And you're going to Wales?
Yeah, but I just saw a report online today that Kubrat Pulev might be injured and the fight might be off, so I don't know.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But though, these Eastern Europeans are so weird, though. I don't know. I never seen fighters pull out like European fighters pull out. They constantly, and this is minus the English, because the English never pull out. And not to say that you shouldn't pull out if you're injured. Like, I would never, like, knock somebody for having a real injury and pulling out. But, you know, you never see the Brits pull out, any of the English. But the rest of Europe, like, you'll randomly get these guys constantly pull out. Like, how many times did Vladimir Klitschko used to pull out? How many times, like, you get, like, random pullouts, like, out of nowhere, you know? I remember Aldo Arabian pulled out the day of the fight. Remember when he fought with Raul Marquez and he woke up with, like, a fever or something like that? And they pulled the fight. They pulled the fight. The day of the fight. They weighed in and everything, and they pulled the fight.
I guess these guys don't need any, I guess they don't need the money.
Bro, a promoter would kill you if you did that in the U.S. Kill you. Are you kidding me? He'd take you to court and sue you. You know what I mean? By that point, the tickets are sold, the contracts are done, the sponsors are there, the everything, the weighing is done. I mean, Christ's sake, everything's there. They would never let you do that. You're fighting. If you wake up with a fever on fight day in the U.S., dude, you're fighting. You have no shot. You ain't getting out of the fight. You know what I mean? So, in Europe, they pull out so randomly, constantly. Like, if they stump their toe, they pull out, you know? So I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying Kulev has I'm not made up injury. This guy's a tough guy. This guy's a really good fighter. But you know, I can't say I'm shocked either. You know, like I'm disappointed if he's pulled out, but I'm not shocked because you constantly see guys pulling out over there. It's like part of the culture. You sign fights, but you also pull out of fights.
You think these guys are heavily muscled? Do you think that could be an issue too? Like it sounds like he injured his right shoulder.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I mean, whatever. It is what it is. I mean, if he's injured, listen, he's got to pull out. If it's a legit injury, I can't knock him. I mean, I'm just complaining as a fan, you know. I guess I'm more like just venting. You know,
70,000 tickets have already been sold, Paulie. 70,000.
How many?
70,000 tickets have already been sold.
Imagine the guy that's got to give that refund.
They gotta get a replacement, no? Or do you think people will be pissed?
Nah, you can't.
Enough time.
You can't put a replacement on a car like that, you know?
Not for 70,000.
You're going to put people in a 90,000 seat stadium, charge them the price they charge them for those tickets, and then give them a half-ass fight. You know, you can't do that.
Get Klitschko to come back.
Unfortunately, you're going to have a nice refund policy going. You're going to have to do a lot of work to refund all those tickets, that's for sure.
70,000 out of 78,000 tickets.
Is it officially off, or is it? I heard it was in jeopardy. Is it officially off now?
It didn't say officially. It says could be called off after Bulgarian suffers a training injury.
Mm-hmm. Because you think it's going to be head games too? Where like, maybe it'll be on, maybe it'll be off. And make Joshua, like, kind of lighten it, go like, kind of that made Joshua, like, take things slowly and easily for a couple of days, and then suddenly the fight's back on, you know?
It says here he suffered an injury 10 days ago but kept it secret by his camp.
I don't know what to think. Something tells me I'm not going to Wales next week. We'll see. Okay. I've been hired this weekend, this Thursday actually. I'm working a small card on CBS Sports Network here in the U.S. for a Real Deal Promotions. Real Deal for Randall Holyfield.
Oh, nice.
Company. A small show. You know, right now, Andrew's doing some small shows. He's got a CBS Sports Network contract.
Rosado? No.
I don't know. I have emailed them for a bout sheet about 3 days ago. I'm still waiting for it. But I don't know. I don't know who's on the card.
Where is it?
It's on Thursday night on CBS Sports Network for all our U.S. Fan base.
Oh, it's not in Vegas. Gabriel Rosado's fighting Glenn Tapia in Vegas on Thursday. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's probably one of those Golden Boy cards. That's a nice little card.
ESPN, nice ESPN 2.
Yeah, that's a nice card. Wow. I'll be working the CBS Sportsnet card in Atlanta.
Where is it? I don't even see that on schedule. I'll have to look for it.
Yeah. So they're flying me out tomorrow. They flew me out of LaGuardia Airport, which I can't stand. LaGuardia Airport is the worst airport in the world, bro. I've literally flown all over the world. To call it the worst airport in the country, it's still not good enough. That is the worst airport in the world, bro. The worst airport. You can't even pick up anybody there. You got to, like, pick them up at, like, a pickup station where they make people take a shuttle to, like, this pickup station when you leave the airport. You can't leave the airport. You have to go from the airport, then you can take a shuttle to a pickup station, and then from your pickup station, you go get your ride that's picking you up, which is your friend or your family member, or even an Uber or whatever, like, or even the car that they sent for you, maybe your job has sent for you to pick you up. Like, you can't just get picked up at the airport. And getting dropped off is a pain in the ass, too. Like, it's like a never-ending construction job. In New York, we have two never-ending construction jobs. We have the BQE, which has been under construction since before I'm born. We'll be under construction, and we'll still be under construction the day I die. And then you have LaGuardia Airport, which is constantly the worst airport in the world, constantly under construction, and never gets better, and it's still under construction. Just constantly, they are the worst. And anyway, I have 20 complaints. I mean, I'm happy to be working for Real Deal Promotions. I got to spend some time with Evander and Azerbaijan. He's got some great stories. I mean, people take Evander too lightly because he's too much of a nice guy, and they think, like, he's a little punched up, bro. That guy has stories that you'll just sit down, man. If you have some coffee with him, have a couple of drinks with him, and just let him tell you stories of the amateurs, to during his career, to some of the business deals gone wrong and right, and just sponsors and dealing with everything and dealing with the overnight success of having beaten Buster Douglas. But I was just in awe of these stories. I love hearing old school stories from old school people. I mean, it was just, like, so cool. Like, I still felt like I was barely scraping the tip of the iceberg. Like, I want to sit. He's the kind of guy, like, I don't even go camping. You know, I'm from the city. I don't go camping. A lot of people in the city like to go camping. Like, I'm not really a camping guy. But Evander's, like, the kind of guy where you want to go camping with him and fucking just listen to him talk. You know what I mean? I, like, listen to him tell you stories, you know?
He's one of my favorite fighters of all time.
But, yes,
so.
He's one of my favorite fighters, too. But I had no idea, you know, that he's actually this talkative once you get to know him, you know what I'm saying? And he'll, you know, he's a quiet guy by nature, but once you get to know him, this guy's got great stories, bro. Like, it was fascinating to listen to him because he's got great experiences. It's one thing that stories, we have the experiences to share. It was just unbelievable. Anyway, I kind of going off topic, but I got hired to work his promotion.
That's not off topic, man. You're talking about the real deal.
Yeah, so anyway, I got hired to work his phone. And I don't know if it had to do with me having spent that time with him in Azerbaijan, because I got home and then my manager, Anthony, called me up and said somebody from Real Deal had reached out to him and they wanted to know my availability and to hire me for Thursday. So I don't know if it had anything to do with me spending time with him in Azerbaijan or not, but nonetheless, man, if anybody out there gets to spend time with this guy, I mean, great stories, great, great story. I mean, just fascinating experiences, you know, through and through, from the amateurs to the gyms to the title reign to, you know, what was going on behind the scenes, to certain negotiations to endorsement deals to TV deal. I mean, just fascinating, fascinating stuff, man. I was just, like, listening to him. I was like a little kid in the candy store just listening to him, man. It was cool.
We got to get him on the show, man.
Yeah. Got to get him on the show, man. Got to get him on the show. That would be cool. But yeah, so I'm working his car on Thursday night, so and I'll be back up in New York on Friday.
Awesome.
All right, that's it. You know,
and,
right?
Yeah. I hope for Joshua's sake, I hope that fight doesn't get canceled.
Yeah, of course. I was looking forward to it, you know. I've actually got a pretty busy stretch, you know, or I thought I did anyway. I'm working the Evander Holyfield card this week. Next week, the Joshua card, if it's still on. And the week after that is the Wilder card. And then the week after that, November 11th, I got hired by Sky Sports to work the card in the National Coliseum with Danny Jacobs. Because, you know, Sky Sports still has an Eddie Hearn contract, you know. So Eddie, even if he's got non-British fighters fighting, Eddie has a deal with Sky, so he'll still get Sky to televise all the fights, you know. So
National Coliseum, that same night, Bitter Biev is fighting, too, in California.
Is he? Oh,
on
wow.
ESPN.
Yeah, I look forward to watching him fight again. He's one of my favorite young fighters.
Liam Smith is fighting the same night. There's a lot of fights that night.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Okay. That's the deal. All right, we'll hope we'll get Pete back next week. Everybody, break Pete's balls, please. Let him know he's got a show to show up to. You know, maybe he's offended. Maybe we got to call it the Magic Hour and Peter Cards.
Oh, is that it?
Or Peter Cards and the Magic Hour.
He's got the name Cards in his name and Magic. It kind of works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's magic tricks for cards, right? I mean... We'll come up with a name. You know what? I'm saying, you know, let's put our listeners to come up with some kind of name, man. We got to include Peter this too somehow. I don't know. We got the Magic Hour. Pete's not showing up to the shows. We got to make something happen. We got to make this thing happen. All right.
Abracadabra.
Abracadabra. I'll see you later.
See ya.